This is Kathy Martin. The date is March 23rd, 1977, and I am interviewing Martha Vecinas, who is editor of Victorian Studies, in her office at 338 Ballantyne.
This is an interview with Nancy Brand on January 19th, 1977, at her home in Bloomington, Indiana, concerning her role in the women's movement. This is Terry Anderson.
Welcome back to another episode of History Unbound, a new show here on WFHB. This episode is called The Women of Bloomington, and it's going to feature the experiences of two Bloomingtonians, Nancy Brand and Martha Vecinas. They'll tell you all about their experience in the women's liberation movement of the 1960s and 70s here in Bloomington. I'm your host, Brooklyn Lambright. In Bloomington and across the nation in the 1960s, the women's liberation movement formed in response to the social inequalities women were experiencing. Social inequalities such as unequal pay, workplace discrimination, divorce laws, domestic violence issues, and more. Women across the nation rose up to make their voices heard. And here in Bloomington, Indiana, women were active in creating equitable circumstances for women at Indiana University and across the community. One of those women was Nancy Brand. Nancy was born October 11, 1943, in New York City. For the first 5 years of her life, Nancy lived with her grandparents. Her father was one of the oldest people drafted into World War II. After graduating high school, Nancy married and had a child. She and her family moved to Queens, where she and her husband attended college. Nancy attended Queens College and majored in Russian history. Nancy isn't sure why she decided to study Russian history, but she thinks it's because her family immigrated from Russia. Before moving to Bloomington, Nancy and her husband lived in West Lafayette. While in West Lafayette, Nancy heard about a march on Washington. It was being organized by various women's groups to protest the war in Vietnam. Here's Nancy describing her first encounter with the women's movement in the 1960s.
So there were about 30 women primarily from Chicago and New York, and a few of them from Washington, D.C., and myself and another woman from Lafayette, Indiana. And those women sat there, and they talked about my life. I mean, they didn't know they were talking about my life. They weren't intending to talk about my life, but it seemed to me that they knew everything that had ever happened to me and understood all of its effects perfectly, and not only that, but its causes. And I was just really dumbfounded. It was the first time in my life I had ever had an experience like that. They talked about public women and private women, and how public lives and private lives, and how women are public people until they stop going to school, and then usually what happens to them is that they get married and have children, or at least in the past that was what happened to them, and then they become private. And maybe they go back out into the workforce, but they're still private women, and the main focus of their lives is at home. And the main problems of their lives are also at home. Being disconnected from the public life of the nation and the people around them, the movers and shakers, the things that make things happen, even on a small level. And usually, if they participate in those things, they do it the way that my great-aunts did. They do it as volunteers, and it's part of their social life, and it's part of their social commitment, but it's not the main focus. It's not what their real goals are. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of women are real depressed, mm-hmm. and real unhappy with their lives, and, you know, yell at their kids and yell at their husbands and sort of don't understand it. Well, I thought it was very exciting that all of these people knew about me.
Nancy and her husband were active in protests against the Vietnam War. While Nancy was an active member of various anti-war organizations, she often felt her voice was not heard within the organizations. For the first time, Nancy felt she could make a difference within an organization. Her voice was heard within the women's liberation movement. Here's Nancy talking about the anti-war movement and her place within it.
At meetings, we didn't usually get to talk, and when we did, people picked up the thread of the conversation exactly where it had left off before we did talk.
We meaning women.
Mm-hmm. And that the influence that we had on the activities that we participated in really came in direct relation to the influence that our husbands or men had in those organizations.
Nancy was excited to share her findings about the women's liberation movement with her husband. Nancy saw a correlation between anti-war demonstrations and the women's liberation movement. But after sharing her findings with her husband, he saw something else. Nancy's husband instead wanted Nancy to recruit women from the liberation movement to the anti-war movement. And Nancy saw this as the undoing of their marriage.
And then I went home all anxious and excited about this whole wonderful thing that I had uncovered in Washington. And fired up about having a support group, because that's what those small groups that Pam Allen had been talking about were called. And anyway, my husband picked me up at the train station in Lafayette and had made a real nice dinner and apologized for the fact that he had invited a friend of ours, a man friend of ours, to come over and hear all what I had to say. And that was kind of nice because he was taking me seriously as a political person. This is in retrospect.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got done talking about all of this exciting, wonderful thing that had happened, and they seemed really to be going right along with me and thinking it was just terrific, and I was thinking, oh boy, these women are wrong. Men are really helpful and supportive. I got done, and my husband and my friend, Eric Hallengren, said to my husband, well, just think, half of the people in the world are women. She's going to organize them all for us into the women's into the anti-war movement. And then I knew that they hadn't really heard what I said at all, that they had only been excited about it because of what they thought it would do for something that they saw themselves as being the focus of and that I was an auxiliary member of. It was at that time that I suppose my marriage began to sort of disintegrate. Not immediate from that moment, but I was really taken aback that my husband didn't contradict Eric, that he didn't understand that there was something more to what I was talking about.
After joining the women's liberation movement, Nancy made several realizations about her own domestic life.
I thought I was really going crazy. I would watch television from morning till night. I would fall asleep with the television on because during part of that time my husband had a job which kept him away at night. I would do almost anything to get out of the house. And not with the baby, without the baby. And those times were so rare that, I mean, I cherished them. And when I finally went back to school, I was so delighted that I had to go on field trips to the Metropolitan Museum and to for anthropology, to the Museum of Natural History and stuff, places where I couldn't drag this child who was between crawling and walking. I was just practically hysterical all the time. I couldn't stand it. I knew I couldn't stand it. But I also didn't know how to get out of it. And going to school part-time wasn't a solution. It really wasn't, because all that did was tend to make me more frustrated at what I couldn't do,
mm-hmm.
and the numbers of things I couldn't do. And I was really very lucky because people supported my going to school. My mother-in-law would come and take care of my kid when I had to write a paper, and you know, for 5 days I could be a real student and immerse myself in books. And then, of course, I would go back to being part mother and part student and not very good at either one of them, and very frustrated again. But here were these people who understood that and were able to put words to it, and were able to put theories to it, and to translate it into something that I could take away with me and help try and share with other people.
After divorcing her husband, Nancy moved to Bloomington, Indiana, to continue her education. And while there, she made several contributions to the community. But we'll discuss Nancy's contributions to the women's liberation movement in just a moment. There is another woman I want to introduce you to. Her name is Martha Vecinas. Martha was born November 20th, 1939, in Rochester, New York. Martha studied at Northwestern for her undergraduate, Johns Hopkins for her master's, and the University of Wisconsin for her PhD, after which she moved to Bloomington to begin working at IU. Martha says education was always encouraged in her family, yet her family, especially her mother, wanted her to get married rather than have a career. Here's Martha describing how she first got involved with the women's liberation movement.
So I got on the phone and phoned everyone who was connected with the political left in Bloomington at the time that we could get hold of very quickly. And we sort of sent out word, and approximately 30 women came for a potluck supper at my house, and she talked about the women's movement. And out of that, we decided to form a consciousness-raising group or groups, and the thing very quickly escalated until we must have had maybe 100 women involved in consciousness-raising groups, and were involved in speaking in the dormitories to women, and of course doing a lot of reading. We formed a women's activist group. They had no title, but most of us who had been in consciousness-raising groups wanted to then start doing something on campus. And at the same time, Peggy Peterson had just begun to do research on discrimination of faculty women, and Sarah Berry, who was in the economics department with another graduate student, had been doing research. And the evidence showed that particularly, you know, faculty were discriminated against in terms of hiring and salaries and committee work that they were on. So a number of us started putting pressure on the university in this area.
After the break, we'll discuss Nancy and Martha's contributions to the women's movement in Bloomington. We'll be right back. Welcome back. So far, we've met two Bloomingtonians, Nancy Brand and Martha Vecinas, who were a part of the women's liberation movement during the 60s and 70s. But let's go back to Nancy for a moment. When Nancy went back to school in Bloomington, she realized she needed some sort of childcare. When IU asked Nancy to write a detailed explanation of her daycare plans, she realized something needed to change with the university's childcare policy. Here's Nancy.
One of the things I needed was daycare, because I was going to go back to school. And this is an interesting thing. One of the questions, when I applied for housing as a married student, but I needed housing as a married student because even though I was no longer married, I had these children. They wanted me to write a very detailed explanation of what I would do with my children while I was away from home. They don't require that of men who are either widowed or divorced and have children with them. And to this day, to my knowledge, they continue to do that. That is an example of sexism in the university. It was very offensive, but I didn't bother fighting it. I just did it. And what I had to answer them with was this wonderful daycare center that I had just heard about.
So Nancy eventually got involved with the formation of daycares around Bloomington. Here's how they worked.
We met in the farmhouse, and the daycare center always opened at 8 in the morning and closed at 5 at night. And each participating family worked at the daycare center one morning or afternoon shift during those hours once a week, and also had to take on other kinds of responsibilities in terms of its running.
Nancy helped start a daycare for community members and, more specifically, mothers enrolled at IU. More daycares popped up around campus, but eventually Nancy says they, quote, ran out of churches to hold the daycares in, end quote. She also advocated for paid leave for student parents to spend with their children.
One of the goals that we had was to get work release time for parents who worked, and we expected to be able to get that from the university first, and then other large-sized businesses in Bloomington and organizations in Bloomington seeing the shining and beautiful example of the university doing a good thing would
sure
follow along. Well, the university is a big business like everything else, and we were sort of too foolish to understand that.
And so the university said no.
Uh-huh.
Outside of child care, Nancy also helped women find access to abortion care.
It was heard that there was women's liberation in the town, and people started coming to women who were connected to this very loose organization and asking how to get abortions and asking how to get birth control. Knew for some reason or somehow about a doctor in Chicago who performed illegal abortions. Abortion was at this time not legal any place in the state. It was a felony to counsel somebody to have an abortion. And these women were very brave and began sending people to this very strange place they had never met any of the people connected with, and it was very terrifying. A woman would call us, and we, not knowing very much, would do the best we could to explain to her what exactly was going to happen. One of the main things we were able to do for her was to let her talk and to try and find out from her, or to try and help her find out from herself whether or not she really wanted to have an abortion. Slowly, we found out that we also needed to discover why she didn't have access to contraception, why she was pregnant, how she could get a pregnancy test, all sorts of things. But in the beginning, it was just she had gone to some doctor, and we believed that she was pregnant because she told us she was. Almost immediately, we had to have doctors who would do pregnancy tests who we could refer patients to. And since we were doing something that was grossly illegal, we couldn't include any doctor even in the knowledge of what we were doing. So all we really were able to do was sort of test out doctors ourselves and find out doctors who were sympathetic to women. And try and find out if there were any who were sympathetic to the idea of abortion so that when this woman came back, if she had any problems, she would have somebody to go to who wouldn't immediately send her to jail.
They became known as the Midwest Alliance. Nancy's group helped women access abortions in the state of New York. The Midwest Alliance got calls from all over the country. Nancy counseled women over the phone from Texas, Colorado, California, and beyond. Nancy was also a part of a newsletter called Front Page. The newsletter brought attention to local women's rights issues and the national women's liberation movement. It included interviews from local women who shared their stories about their working and living conditions. Nancy was also active in the establishment of the IU Women's Center. The center housed the newsletter and also acted as a safe place for women to share their ideas and concerns. So we've talked about Nancy and her achievements within Bloomington's women's liberation movement. Let's move on to Martha. While Nancy attended IU to advance her education, Martha worked at the university. Martha's experience was a bit different than Nancy's, as she often encountered unfriendly working conditions within the university. So Martha's goal became the advancement of women in academia. It started with a potluck supper that began Martha's experience with the women's movement. They formed a women's activist group on campus that would tackle discrimination against female faculty.
And those of us who were working here in the university felt that we should do what we could here to try to change things. So we put pressure on the college to form a task force on women. That we're very successful in that.
Here's an encounter Martha describes about a female graduate student.
A graduate student in history came by to see me and said that she had overheard two faculty men in her department in the corridor speak about a woman job candidate who was coming, and that they had been laughing and saying, well, we'll see if we can get her. And she was so outraged by this attitude of the men, treating her first of all as a kind of joke and secondly going out to try to get her, to rattle her, that she suggested that we try to set up a network of having women attend these lectures, job candidates, to offer them support.
From this, Martha and other female faculty decided to form an alliance made up of concerned university women.
So we sent out a mailing in which we ourselves, the two of us, got a lot of red envelopes and mimeographed off a call for a meeting one afternoon, and we sent it out to all the faculty that were in the telephone book and all of the graduate students that we could get names of, with Eigen, and you know, we stuffed envelopes everywhere. And I think we sent out a call for, I guess we must have contacted about 800 or 900 people. Anyway, to our delight, about 60 people showed up. And we immediately formed ourselves into an organization called Concerned University Women, which we felt was about as innocuous a name as we could get. And we decided at that stage, we felt politically that it was important that we have both women faculty and graduate students together, and we pushed this. Most of the faculty preferred an all-faculty organization, but throughout the rest of that year, we held regular coffee hours to encourage graduate student women to come and meet graduate faculty women and to get to know each other. And then in the late spring of that year, I guess that would be 1970, we held a meeting of faculty women to begin pressure for equal pay and promotion of women.
This provided a safe space for faculty women to meet each other and share their concerns. They also began to pressure the university to pay female faculty equally. They also pressured the university to form a department focused on women's studies.
It started out with one honors course that Rhoda Bunnell started, and it was teen taught. And from there, it went into a lot of courses, a lot more courses. For instance, I offered a course under a rubric called Literature and Society, which was on women, that sort of thing. And for a long time, there would be a kind of erratic listing. There would be one on sex roles and sociology, which, if you knew, it was largely on women. Now we have more courses that are actually in the catalog, and we have women's studies courses listed separately in the class printout in the fall and in the spring, and we also, of course, have our own publicity so that you can tell right away.
The women's studies department faced some opposition from the university.
Well, we got a lot of opposition, mainly in the form of it's too much money, it costs too much money, it's too expensive. That particular year was one of many, many years in which there was a budget crisis.
They didn't originally want to limit the department to the university, but because funding was tied to the university, Martha and her fellow faculty members were unable to expand the Women's Studies department to women in the community. Martha, however, wishes she could have spent more time working with community women. Martha's primary contribution to the women's liberation movement here in Bloomington was her advancements in the university's women's programs. She advocated and eventually formed the Women's Studies Department, and she created an organization to address the concerns of female faculty. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll discuss what Nancy and Martha describe as their hopes for the future of the women's movement. Stay with us. Welcome back. You've gotten to hear from two women involved in Bloomington's women's movement during the 60s and 70s. They've described their experiences advocating for women's rights in the community and at Indiana University. Nancy helped form daycares across Bloomington, counsel women in search of abortion care, and helped begin the IU Women's Center. Martha created the Alliance of Concerned University Women and founded IU's Women's Studies Department. Nancy and Martha were interviewed in the 1970s, but during their interviews, they expressed their hopes and goals for the women's movement going forward. In their interviews, they express elements of the women's movement they hope to see improved. Now, nearly 50 years later, it's interesting to see what modern feminism has or still hasn't accomplished. Let's take a listen.
I think a lot of women think we've won, we haven't, and that we could slip back very easily. I think a lot of women feel, for instance, that women's liberation means more opportunities in the professions, and not every woman and not every man is going to be a professional, and that there's going to be a lot of other jobs, and that there's not been substantial changes, for instance, for secretaries at this university, in working conditions, pay, and treatment. I could go on, but you see, I think that in some ways there are certain victories that have been sufficient to perhaps lessen the level of anger. But you can't live at a pitch of anger forever. That's very destructive, too. Equality in terms of getting ahead in the world as it is, there will always be women who cannot be part of that, but it will always be an elite, and your ideology will be only available to an elite. On the other hand, if you base your ideology, the realization of your ideology. On the other hand, if you go in the opposite direction, you have the same problem, because clearly it is impossible for a large numbers of women to separate themselves off and form a women's community, or to move away from a male world into a completely nurturing world. I think ideally, what you would do is you would have some kind of combination, but I also feel, you see, it's part of a larger concern, or another concern of mine, which is namely socialism, And I feel that we will never have a world that is available, that is a feminist world, until we don't have capitalism.
Here's Nancy.
No, I was going to say that I think that, you know, women will be different in the future. I don't think that's the truth. I think that the women's movement, all of the women's movement, has made opened up a lot of possibilities for a lot of people. People can walk on the face of the earth in the United States and say things like, well, I don't know if I'll ever have children. Women can say, I've been married, I've had a child, I don't want this child anymore, I give it to my husband or my former husband. Women can say, I want birth control. Women can say, I think I would like to be a lawyer. I think I would like to be a doctor. And do in increasing numbers. Lots of women still want to can't wait to get married and have children and settle down, only to discover that they're not particularly happy and not be able to figure out a way out of that. For all of these wonderful strides that have been made, there's been some very bad things that have come. Lots of women feel ashamed of staying home and being housewives, and that's also a bad thing, because there are some women that are happy doing that and ought to be able to and feel good about it. Very few people have ever thought that housework was an important thing, and very few people have worked very hard, the women's movement being one of the more guilty, at ever saying that housework was terribly important and that people should be respected for doing it. What's your occupation? You know, do you work? Do you work outside the home? As though you don't work when you come home. What do you work at? They say to you as you're cleaning your stove.
While we discussed in detail two women who made contributions to the women's liberation movement in Bloomington, numerous other women across the nation also made massive contributions to women's rights. The women's liberation movement is considered the second wave of feminism, after the first wave, which gave women the right to vote in the early 20th century. The second wave of feminism focused on women's experience in politics, family life, the workplace, and women's sexuality. Women across the nation were experiencing what Betty Friedan described as a lack of fulfillment from only working domestically in the household. During this time, the National Organization for Women, or NOW, was born in order to address the national crisis women were facing. NOW worked to pass legislation such as the Equal Rights Amendment, which would ensure an equality of rights regardless of sex. NOW also worked to create greater access to contraception and abortion care. We got to hear from Nancy Brand and Martha Vecinas. We learned about the contributions they made to Bloomington during the 60s and 70s. They impacted and advocated for women's rights within IU and the surrounding community. Nancy helped form a daycare for student parents and advocated for paid leave for student parents. She also counseled and advocated for women in need of abortion care. She worked to help fund women's trips to New York, where they received necessary medical care. She also contributed to Front Page, a women's newsletter which detailed women's rights issues in Bloomington and nationally. And she was a part of the IU Women's Center, which provided a safe place for women in the community to gather. Martha Vecinas advocated for female faculty members and women in academia. She began the Alliance of Concerned University Women, who petitioned IU for equal pay for their male and female faculty. She also worked to start the Women's Studies Department at the university. These are just two women in Bloomington who made a difference and advocated for women's rights. Their legacies are reflections of the work of many women locally and nationally who have fought tirelessly for women's equality. Happy Women's History Month, and thanks for listening to this episode of History Unbound. Check out WFHB.org for more information on History Unbound. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to tune in next month for more. Be sure to follow History Unbound on Instagram at history.unbound. A special thanks to the Center for Documentary Research and Practice at Indiana University for their audio interview of Nancy Brand and Martha Vecinas. I'm your host, Brooklyn Lambray.
I don't know. I guess I think that someday in the future, just as we picked up the threads of another women's movement that started, in conjunction with the abolitionist movement, women will come along and pick up the threads of what we were trying to do and take it another step further. And, you know, that's progress. A little baby step here and there. And that's history, and that's life.